Just as an introduction, you could open up your Chumash to page 44. So today's topic, we're going to start a new topic. We spent 4 weeks on the story of Noach and his vineyard, and we completed that last week. So we're going to move on to our next story, which will be the Tower of Babel, one of the most complex and confusing stories that we have. And we'll see part of the complexity is because it's so unclear when you actually read through the Chumash exactly what the story is about. So what I want to do just as we begin today, what we'll do is we'll go through the story. We'll just learn it's only 9 psukim long. Today what we'll do is we'll learn through them. We're going to raise questions. Not answers, just questions today. So we'll go through, we'll figure out where are the big questions, where are the little questions in the story. But what we want to do before we even do this is let's just put it in context as to where the Chumash actually places this story of this Tower of Babel and the dispersion of man in the 70 languages and all that's going on in the story. Let's just see where the story is. And that is, if you open up your Chumash, as I said, to 44. This is the end of the flood. Noah has come out of the flood as we studied the verses on page 42 through 44, starting with verse 18 through verse 28. That was the story of Noah and his vineyard. He comes out, as we learned, he gets himself drunk, and all of the episodes which take place over there. Following that, we have the list of the 70 nations which come out of the three sons of Noah. We have Shem, we have Cham, we have Yafes, the three boys, and from them come 70 nations. The Torah lists them in chapter 10. So if you'll see, for example, in verse 2 on chapter 10 on page 45, we'll just do the English side for now, the sons of Yafes, and we'll give the list of the sons. You know, you can actually cheat. On the bottom of page 47, you'll see the actual chart has been created. You have these 70 nations. So you see the three sons across the top, Yafes and Cham and Shem. And this chart is really just chapter 10, in which the Torah goes through the sons of Yafes in verse 2, goes through all of his sons and grandsons, and then beginning in verse 6 on the top of page 47, you'll see the sons of Cham. It goes through his four sons, then his grandsons, and then beginning in verse 21, you have Shem, and then his sons, grandsons, and great-grandsons, taking you all the way through the 70. You will notice, if you look in your chart, under Shem, so son number 47, Arpachshad, that's his third son. He has Shelah, number 54, who has Eber, who has Peleg and Yoktan. So you'll see when the Torah actually describes this inside, in verse 25, Eber had two sons. The name of the first was Peleg, for in his days the earth was divided. So that the division of the earth, which we're about to read, takes place during the lifetime of Peleg, who's under the line of Shem, who we, of course, come from as well. But that's just, we'll get back to this a little later. I just want to put the context. So the Torah has just gone through who the 70 nations are, gone through all the descendants of the three sons of Shem, Cham, and Yafes. And then you get to chapter 11. This is going to be our story, which we're going to study. Page 48, chapter 11, verses 1 through 9 is going to be our study. And if you flip a page to get the back end, what's going to happen after our study, on page 50 and 51, we go back to the descendants of Shem, except we're going to go through them in more detail to get to Avraham. So we have the general list of the 70 nations that come out of the Teva, that come out of the Ark. We break for our story, which we're about to read. Then we go back to Shem and go through in greater detail who his descendants were, but we're not looking to get just to the 70, we're looking to specifically trace Avraham, his father and grandfather, to get to us, which is going to be the completion of the story in Lech Lecha, and the rest of that. That's the context of our story. You're the last two people allowed in, so you just made it. Okay, that's the context. Take 2 minutes, read through the story on your own, read it through in Hebrew, read it through in English. Take note of some patterns, take note of some questions. We're going to go through it obviously together in a moment, but just that you should be a little bit familiar with the story before we actually tackle it in depth, just read through the story on the sheet that you should have, noticing the patterns, noticing the story, getting ready to ask some questions. Just take a minute or two on your own and read it through. Let's get started. I'll take that as a sign that it's time to get started. Let's go there. In other words, you read through this story and it's very hard to see the problem of the story. What really happened? Why was this such a horrible episode that God comes down, everyone's dispersed, this should never happen again? Let's read it through. That was the basic. Now, as I like to introduce when we go through this, we have big questions and little questions. This is I'm just borrowing a term from Rabbi David Foreman. So the big questions, capital B, are the type of questions that if you can't answer this question, you don't understand what the story is about. These are the major questions that say, if someone sits down to you on the airplane and says, you know, I was just reading the Bible, the Tower of Babel, and they ask you, what was so bad? If you can't answer that question, you don't understand the story. Those are the big questions on the story. And then we have lots of little questions. Why does the Torah use this word as opposed to that word? Why does this phrase appear four different times in the story over and over again? Those kinds of questions are not the big questions, but it's usually from the little questions that we'll gain an insight into the answers to the bigger questions. So let's ask them, let's put them both on the table. Again, I'm not looking for answers. This is just about raising the questions as we go through the story. Okay, let's start from the top. Now again, the context was set already. Noah has gone through the flood, comes out of the Teva. We have the episode with his vineyard. That episode is now done, and we have the descendants, and we've just been given the list of who all those descendants are. Says the Torah as follows, V'yichol ha'aretz sofa echas udvarim achadim, and the whole earth, kol ha'aretz, all 70 people representing the future 70 nations, was of one language and of one speech. Questions, comments?
What's the difference between language and speech?
Great, so the Torah uses a double language here. They were sofa echas, they were one language. Now, one language would seem to mean that they're talking the same language. In other words, we're talking English in here, as opposed to you could talk Hebrew, Yiddish, Spanish, whatever. They were all talking the same language, and they were talking one speech. Udvarim achadim. What's the difference between being of one language and one speech? Now, it could be, for example, let's say I say this is a table, and you say this is a shulchan. So now we're using different languages, but we're really saying the same thing. So we can talk in the same language and say different things. You could say yes, and I can say no. In that instance, we're talking the same language, but saying different things. Or we can say the same things and say them in different languages. But the Torah is clearly defining two different aspects, that the world at this time was both one language and one speech. And we'll know whenever we have things like this, this will open us up for Rashi and Midrashim to find nuances in the story. If the text, which is very tightly worded, as we know, this entire story is all of 9 verses, so if you have a repetitive phrase, there's clearly going to be something there on various levels. But let's just start with, that's our opening line. The world was one language and it was one speech. Let's re-ask the question, is this a good thing or is this a bad thing?
We don't know.
Well, it sounds good.
I mean, we don't know. It sounds good. I mean, it's nice to have unity. We have oneness. The Torah doesn't seem to be necessarily giving us its opinion on whether or not it's good or bad. It's stating a fact. I don't know. Sounds good. And it came to pass, Pasuk Beis, Vayihi b'nosam mikedem, Vayimsu vik'o be'eretz shinar, Vayeshvu sham. It came to pass when they journeyed from the east, they found a valley in the land of Shinar, and they settled there.
Who is they?
Who traveled? Who's the only pronoun that we have prior to this?
The whole earth.
The whole earth. So after we have the first, the whole earth is one language and one speech, and the next pasuk is, they traveled. Now, the psukim before this listed the 70 descendants, based on the 3 sons of Noach, Shem, Chom, and Yafes, could clearly be referring to some of them, but the Torah does not tell us exactly who is the they that traveled. We don't know where they traveled from, other than the east, why they traveled, and what exactly was going on. But somebody is traveling, some group is traveling from the east, and they find a valley in the land of Shinar. We don't know anything about Shinar. And they decide to settle there. Why do they settle there rather than anywhere else? Unclear. But do we need to know that they found a valley in Shinar and settled there? Yes, that we need to know. These people traveling from the east find this valley in Shinar, decide to settle there, and that's where our story takes place. Okay. And they said to one another, Vayomru ish el re'ehu, Hava nilbana levenim. One man says to another, come, Hava, Nil benot levenim, let us make bricks, v'nisrafa lisrefa, and burn them in fire. Vatihi lehem halevena la'oven, and the bricks serve them as stone. The hachemar, and this bitumen or slime, hoyolahem lachomer, serve them as mortar. Questions and comments?
What did they use it for?
What are they using this for? Okay, so that we'll put that on hold because we're going to get a little bit more information in the next verse. Let's stop there. In other words, the next verse is going to be a new statement. Pasuk Dalet is going to start, verse 4, Vayomru is going to be with another, and they said. So it's almost as if verse 3 was a statement unto itself, and then we're going to get to a new statement in verse 4, which would make the question of why? What's the plan here? Who's speaking? Let's talk about that. Who's speaking here?
The they who traveled.
Right? Ish el re'ehu. So there's no one particular person who's defined, unless we can come with a conclusion as to who is going to be this ish, who is this man. But it seems to be a very general one man saying to another. So it seemed to be, was this a individual's idea or some type of unanimous decision amongst the group?
Sounds like unanimous.
No, it sounds like.
Pretty much a consensus.
Vayomru ish el re'ehu is a plural, and they said one to another, so it sounds like they've all agreed. And what are they going to do? Let us make bricks and burn them in fire. Clearly they're going to build something. Fine. Now, the bricks serve them as stone. So what's the term describing here? When you talk about stone and brick, what are those?
Sounds like a building, like a structure.
Okay, they're clearly building. Let's say they had wanted to build. What's the easy? I don't know if the easiest, but let's work through what they're doing. What are they doing in this verse? What's the goal in this conversation that they have?
Building materials.
Building materials. They're not building a tower yet. We're not there. They're looking to create building materials. As the pasuk says, the brick was going to serve them as
stone.
As stone. Meaning, what would they normally have built with?
Stone.
Normally they would have built with stone. They're around in whatever time and period they find stone, and they build out of the stone. And this was an initiative to do something else. This is an initiative to create brick, and then the brick would serve them as stone, which seems to be a step up, so to speak, in the building process. Stone is going to be much more of a primitive form. It's not easily shaped. It's not easily built upon. You can't build as high, large, and strongly rooted structure out of stone than you can if you're making your own brick and forming it and burning it in the oven. And so this first verse is simply saying, let's create bricks, burn them in the fire, which is going to be the process of forming the bricks, and now the brick will serve them as stone. It will now serve the purpose that the stone would have otherwise have served, but now they have brick to be able to do so. Now there's a lot that we will talk about, the difference between building with stone and building with brick.
Are we to assume that this is the creation of the concept of bricks?
Well, we certainly don't have any mention of bricks before this, and it seems that's certainly fair, as we're going through the story the first time, that this pasuk is their coming to this understanding or conclusion of let's make bricks, as opposed to whatever they would have been using to build beforehand, because the brick is going to serve them as stone, was sort of this new either initiative or new concept or first time kind of thing. It sounds a little bit that way. I'm not ready to say for sure one way or the other, but that's definitely what it seems sounds like. Yeah.
So does brick possibly allude to foundation, and the phrase stone or word stone apply possibly to the generation's father to son that would set something in place for
could be. Evan is comprised of the words av to ben, aleph, beis, nun. Possibly. Well, there'll be a lot to talk about as far as stone and brick. And then we have at the end of the pasuk something which wasn't discussed at all. And then you have this chemer, hayolahem lachomer. and then this slime would serve them as mortar, which wasn't part of their original statement. Their original statement was just that they were going to create this brick, and then the Torah adds that they had this other material which they were going to then use as the mortar, because if you have bricks, then you're going to have mortar in order to make them last. Fine. So we have this people, they're moving, the world is one nation and one language. They move east, somebody, a group, moves east, they settle in the valley in the land of Shinar, and they say to one another, let's make bricks. Okay, so far so good. Is our story an evil, sinister plot, or is it a pretty innocuous story at this point? At this point, it's totally innocuous. We have a group of people who are deciding to become builders. Four, and they said, Vayomru. Now again, as I just pointed out, both Psukim Gimel and Dalet, verses 3 and 4, both start with the word Vayomru, which seems to imply like a new statement. It's not a continuation. Verse 4 is not a continuation of the statement of verse 3. There is a new Vayomru. So now we have bricks. Now we have the materials, and now we have a new statement. And they said, Hava, come, Nivne Lanu Ir. Let's build a city. Umigdol v'rosho v'ashomayim, and a tower with its top in the heavens. V'nase lanu shem, and let us make a name for ourselves. Pen nafutz al pene chol ha'aretz, lest we be dispersed across the face of the whole earth. Questions, comments?
Is it the same vase talking in 3 and 4?
Okay, well, we certainly have no evidence to the contrary. Notice the Torah does not give us any pronouns as to who the they is in verse 3 and who the they is in verse 4. So it certainly would imply that it's the same.
Well, I think there's a problem with the non-Selan of Shame.
Yeah.
Okay.
Who are they making a name with?
Excellent. What's the idea that let us make a name for ourselves? What do you mean make a name for ourselves? With whom? Who? We don't even know who this group is. We don't know who else is out there, but they apparently want to make a name for themselves. Why? And what do they want that name to say? What should people say about them? If they succeed and they've made a name for themselves, what would they say? That they made a city with a tower up to the heavens? That's the only information we're given. They were successful in making a city and building a tower up to the heavens. Okay, I mean, that's what we have so far. Now, why do they want to make a name for themselves? What does the Torah tell us?
They're dispersed across the face of the earth.
So, now, if somebody says that, what fear do they actually have?
They're going to be wiped out.
Well, they don't have the fear of being wiped out. What's their fear?
They not trust God?
They're not going
to
be
Well, let's make it more simple. They won't be together. Their simple fear is that they'll be dispersed. Now, they don't have any precedent for this. I mean, in Noah's time, the generation that they're coming out of, what happened to them? They weren't dispersed, they were completely wiped out. So this people that has moved from the east and settled in Shinar and have made these bricks decide that we need to build a city and a tower. And what's the reason why we need to build a city and a tower? Because we need to have a name for ourselves. And why do we have a name for ourselves? Because we might be dispersed. So the obvious questions that we then need to ask, we're not answering them today, but the questions we're going to need to ask are, will the tower prevent them from being dispersed? What's their goal? You sit down, you're in this meeting. There's a board meeting taking place in the land of Shinar. And the people are saying, we're afraid we're going to be dispersed. Okay. What should we do about it? Let's build a city and a tower to heaven. And somehow they thought that this would work. Having a city and a tower to the heavens would create a name for themselves. And then they won't be dispersed. I guess. I'm just reading the Pesukim. Does it make any sense? I mean, it makes sense to be a little bit of Pesukim, but we're, it seems like we're missing something. Now, at this point, if we would stop and say, is this an innocuous story, or is there some sinister plot here?
Well, there's a plot.
Okay, we've developed a plot at least. Okay, so far now, I agree. We now have a plot. Is it sinister?
It could be.
Could be. How could it be innocent? Let's say they were afraid of marauding nations. They're one of 70. And they were afraid of being dispersed by somebody else, and they wanted to build a tower to protect themselves.
Maybe they thought if they had built up a city, if it's a stronghold, and a tower, it gives some strength to their name, and people would be afraid of them and wouldn't come in and attack and, you know, try to disperse them.
Possible. All I'm saying is, as we read through the text, what we have now is this people, and they decide, so there's a little bit more of a plot, and there's clearly something missing in these psukim, because their storyline is a little bit odd. They decide to build a city, and again, I want to just point out that it sounds like the decision to build the city was after they had the bricks. And verse 3 says, let's make bricks. And then they said, come, let's build a city and a tower to the heavens. Now, we haven't really focused on that part either, which is obviously going to be a central part of the story, because the title of the page says the tower of Babel. So it's clear, based on the title of the page, that the tower is going to be significant. So not only do they want to build a city, but they want to build a tower to the heavens. Now, here, clearly, Chazal, the sages, are going to see references and hints as to what's going on. What's the meaning of building a tower to the heavens? That the head, the top, the rosh of the tower should reach all the way to the heavens. So, you know, you've probably heard over the years some type of thing, fighting against God. So here's where we're going to have to, that phrase is going to have to be revisited as to what exactly did it mean to them that they would have the top of their tower in the city that they built with the bricks that they made will reach all the way to the heavens, and that will make for themselves a name. And then, lest we be dispersed, we'll always have this tower and our name to somehow protect ourselves. Okay, not pretending to have any understanding in this, but to move forward anyway. Verse 5, Pasukei, Vayered Hashem Liros Es Ha'ir V'yes HaMigdol Asher Banu B'nei Ha'adam. So Hashem descended to look at the city and the tower which the sons of man built.
Now it's built.
Or I guess, I wonder if that's even a good translation. I wonder if Asher Banu is that they were building. Asher Banu could be they built. All right, I'll check and make sure that's a correct translation, that they built it in past tense. Okay, what do we see? What's going on in this pasuk?
Hashem is checking it out.
Okay, he's checking it out, right? That's it, right? Hashem, that's all the pasuk says. Hashem descended to look at the city and the tower which the sons of man built. Now obviously Hashem does not need to descend to check it out, but we do find this language in a couple of different places in the Chumash where we have almost this exact language of Vayered Hashem, of literally of Hashem being able, or the language that the Chumash uses of going down to look at something, which we'll see as there's a specific meaning whenever we have that. It's usually not good things that we have Hashem coming down to check things down. But whatever this city and this tower was, which as we read through the verse, didn't necessarily give us, I mean, it was an interesting plot, but not so much going on. Up in heaven, this was of interest. This was of note. So Hashem comes down to check it out. Now, there's a very odd phrase in this pasuk.
I don't know if this is it, but why does it say Asher Banu B'nei Adam? Why not just B'nei Adam?
Right. Excellent. Right. The sons of man built. What is the reference to these people? They're now being called the sons of man, as opposed to the sons of tigers? Like, what do you mean? That's what Rashi is going to ask that question. What do you mean the sons of man? Who else would be building this tower? Just say, he wants to check out the city and the tower that the men, the people, have built. But they're not referred to as regular men, people. They're referred to as B'nai Ha'adam. Now, what's the reference? Do you have to guess?
Noah was the first man. The leader.
Okay, who's really the first man?
Adam.
So B'nai Ha'adam almost sounds as if the Torah is saying to look at the city and the tower that the sons of Ha'adam, the man, had built. Meaning there was something that we're going to connect back to the very first man and all that took place with him and his episodes and his mistakes. And now we have the sons of that man are now building a city and a tower. So again, the little things sometimes lead to a bigger question or try to flesh out a bigger picture. Something that's going on here is piquing the interest of Hashem up above, that he comes down, and when he comes down to look, he says, let me see what the sons of the man, Ha'adam, are doing. So that there's some layer of a connection between what took place and what is taking place. Okay, now what does Hashem want to look at? Let's just comb the psukim for everything that we have in it.
The city and the tower.
The city and the tower. Because when you go back to verse 4, what did they say they wanted to build? Let us build us a city and a tower with its top in the heavens. So both of those things, the next pasuk says Hashem wants to come down and check out both the city and the tower. As if, again, they're two entities, and he wants to see what's going on with both of them. Okay, pasuk vav, a very difficult pasuk. There are a couple of parentheses. So let me just explain how I translated it, and then we'll read it through in two ways. The parentheses on the Hebrew side of your Chumash, there are obviously no vowels, nor are there punctuation marks, nor are there periods, question marks, or any of the like. Which means that the same line in Hebrew can be read as a statement or as a question. You have to know how to read it, but there's no question mark in the actual Chumash to tell you this is a rhetorical question, or this is a real question, or this is an exclamation point, or this is a period. It's simply not there. So what I did for our purposes, trying to stick to a literal translation from which we'll build upon the literal translation, we'll build the Midrashim and the Mefarshim on top of that. But so the literal translation should be read on the English side without the parentheses. We'll just read it straight through. That's the literal translation of this pasuk, and then we'll read it through the way Rashi reads it, which is as a rhetorical question. So the literal pasuk vav would read as follows: Vayomer Hashem. So Hashem has come down, and he's now seen the tower, and he's seen the city that they're building, and he says, "Hein am echad v'safa achas l'chulam." Behold, they are one people, and they have one language for all. V'zeh hachilam la'asos, and this is what they begin to do. Now, if we stopped here, have they done anything wrong?
Not that we can tell yet.
They've built a city, and they built a tower. Now, the tower, we know, has to have its head, the rosh of the migdol, has to be up in the heavens. So we'll find something in there, but the simple reading of the text really leaves us with very little as far as some egregious mistake that you'd say, oh yeah, God's going to come down any minute now, lightning bolts should be striking. We don't find any of that in the text. But he comes down, and he looks and he says, can you believe this? Here is a people, one language, one people, and this is what they do. They build a city and a tower. V'ata, now this is the literal reading of the pasuk, lo yibotzer mehem kol asher yozmu la'asos. And now nothing will be withholden from them which they proposed to do. So the simple reading without any punctuation would be as a statement. Nothing will be withholden from them from which they proposed to do. Rashi reads this as a question, as a rhetorical question. V'ata lo yibotzer mehem kol asher yozmu la'asos, and that will be read with the parentheses that I put in. And now, should nothing be withholden from them which they proposed to do? Should I not stop them from doing what they wanted to do, is the way that Rashi reads it? So we'll leave both of those out there, the simple reading, and then the way Rashi sees it. And let's now scale back and just look at the big picture again. So here we have this story of people moving to the east. They set up this, they build the bricks, they build a tower with the city, and Hashem decides to come down and take a look. Vayered Hashem. He comes down to see what's going on with this tower. And what does he say? Behold, they are an am echad v'safa achas. They are one people with one language. Now note, how were they introduced to us in the very first verse of the parak? Right? Not as one people. They were introduced to us as one language and one speech. And now when Hashem comes down and he looks at them, he says, they're an Am Echad. They're one nation. One people. V'safa achas l'chulam. And they have one language for all of them. Now, has the language part had anything to do with the story at this point? Let's say we had skipped the first verse of this story. We started in verse 2. And it came to pass, when they journeyed from the east, they decided to make some bricks, they decided to build a tower, God comes down. Would we be missing anything in the story that we weren't told that there was only one language that existed at the time? It has not been part of the story. We've not gotten back to it. Yet, the Torah introduces the story with that, which means, obviously, that's a critical part of the story. One has to know that piece of information in order to read the story. Hashem comes down and he looks at them, and what's the first thing out of his mouth? I can't believe it. This is one people with one language. So that theme comes up again. That which the Torah opens the story with is the first response that Hashem has, but you only have one language. Yet it hasn't really played an active role in the story, which points us in the direction of, clearly that's the backdrop of a story, and it's going to be of great significance that the story is taking place with the people of one language, and Hashem looks at that and says, you only have one language. How could it be that this is what you're doing? Building a city and a tower. So we'll have to get back to that, but as we just go through again, raising the questions, the language issue, which did not seem to play a major issue in the story, but it clearly does because it's the opening line, and then it's Hashem's first line when he comes down at them. So let's continue. So what does he say? So he says, there are one people, and they have only one language for all. V'zeh hachilam la'asos, and this is what they begin to do. Now, for those who are here for our previous discussion of Noach and his vineyard, there is a word in this pasuk which should remind us of that discussion. And since you don't have the actual story in front of you, you could flip back to page 42. Yes. Page 42, the story that we previously studied began in verse 18. We're just reading on the English side. No, sons of Noah who came out of the ark were Shem, Cham, and Yafes. Cham being the father of Canaan, these were the three sons. Now 20. Noah, the man of the earth, now in English it says, debased himself. But when we read the Hebrew, what was the Hebrew word? In the beginning of Pasuk Chof Aleph, Vayochel Noach, which literally translated as Noach began. That Noach began right out of the table. What did he begin to do? To plant a vineyard. And we spent a lot of time discussing that the Torah uses the same word, which specifically means to begin and to debase, and that's no coincidence. He began. And because he began by planting a vineyard, he was debasing himself. But it's the same word because it's the first thing that he did. They're both true. It was his beginning, and it was debasing. Vayochel. He began with the vineyard. Now we read the next story that takes place in the Chumash. The 70 nations are introduced to us. They move out east. They found the city in Shinar. And what does Hashem say? V'zeh hachilom la'asos, and this they begin to do. The same word of vayochel that Noach began / Noach debased himself, lashon chulin, chulin to debase, chal la'hatzil to begin, and then Hashem says that same word on these people, they're one language, and this they begin to do, to build the city and the tower. Now, we still don't have a full understanding of what's so bad about that, because, I mean, is he just upset that they should have been doing something more productive than a city and a tower, or is there something more sinister going on? That we don't have an answer to. But clearly, that same language that was used of Vayochel Noach, that Noach began and debases himself by planting a vineyard, we now have that word show up again, Hashem saying, you are one people in one language, and this is what you begin to do? The Atah, he then concludes, and now, let's read it the way Rashi reads it. Should nothing be withholden from them that they propose to do? Should I not stop them? So the way Rashi reads, like a rhetorical question. Obviously, they must be stopped. This can't possibly be that these people, one nation, one language, beginning to build this city and this tower, how can I not stop them? Now, if we read it as a rhetorical question, there's an obvious problem to us, the readers. Because if it's a rhetorical question, that means the answer is really obvious. Like, of course I have to stop them. But if we were to ask ourselves the question, why does this city and this tower have to be stopped? I don't know. I mean, what are they doing wrong? What are they doing? They're building a tower with the head of the tower up to the heavens. Something's amiss. Because Rashi reads this as a rhetorical question of, can you believe it? One people, one nation, this is what they're doing. How can I not stop them? Okay, so obviously we just keep coming back to that same point of what were they doing that elicits this response of I must go down and check this out? look, you're only one people in one language. How can I not stop what it is that they're doing? Okay, next. So far, so good. Clear as mud. Zion 7. Hava. Kama. Nerda v'navla sham sifasam. Let us descend and there confuse their language. Asher lo yishmu ish svas re'eyu. That they should not understand one another's language. So this is the end of Hashem's quote, which began in verse 6. Vayomer Hashem is in verse 6. Hashem said, behold, they are one people, they have one language, should I not stop them? Come, let us descend and there confuse their language, that they should not understand one another's language. So what do we see? A couple points.
Who is us?
Okay, once again we have this plural language, which we've seen a couple of times now in the Chumash. We already saw this in the very beginning of the story of creation, in Nasa Adam B'Tzalmeinu, let us make man in our image. I think we had that in our previous story also once, right? Did we have the plural language with Noah? And we had it some. It comes up once or twice elsewhere as well, not specifically there. But we have. So, what is this plural language? Who is God talking to that He says, "Come, let us go down"? Good. Point number one. What else do we have in this pasuk?
Yishma'u means hear.
Excellent. Good. The word Shema is a very interesting word in the Hebrew language. How would you translate the word Shema? Right, listen, hear. So now you know, all of you know, that can't really be the full extent of the language, because we say, of course, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Does that mean listen and hear the words? Right, it means much deeper than just to hear. In other words, we use that same thing in the English language, for instance, oh, I hear you. That doesn't mean my eardrums physically registered the chords and the sounds made out of your throat that I heard you. That means I understand what you're saying, right? You say, you're hearing me, but you're not understanding me. No, I hear you. That means I hear and I understand. So in the Hebrew language, it's very similar. Shema Yisrael doesn't just mean, listen, we used to say this, we don't say this three times a day just to hear the words. It's to understand what it means, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Those four words are packed. Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad is not like, if you really get that, that's enormous. So it's Shema Yisrael, listen, but listen to discern, to understand. And that's the word that Hashem uses here, Asher lo yishmu'u ish svas re'eyu, that they should not. That's why I have it translated here as understand. Even though the Hebrew word that's used is Shema, which is an interesting usage of the word there, but that they should not just hear, but that they should not understand one another's language. Excellent. So again, so clearly here we have that theme coming up again of the language. The Torah opens up with that story. That's the opening line. The man, the world, the entire world was one language and one speech. They go through their story. God comes down and says, I can't believe it. You're only one language. So what should I do to you? How will I stop this? And because rhetorically speaking, it can't be, God says, that I can let this continue. That's impossible. So what's the response He gives? I will confuse their languages. Because that seems to be a theme running right through as part of the problem. That's the starting point. And that's what He says to them. I can't believe it. You're only one language. What about the word hava, come? Where have we seen that before?
In verse 3.
Good. And?
4.
Excellent. Verse 3 and 4, when the people who move to Shinar do the speaking, they both start with that language. Vayomru Yishal Re'eyu in verse 3, hava, come, let's make for ourselves bricks. Verse 4, Vayomru, hava, come, let's make for ourselves a city. God says in verse 7, Hava, come, let's confuse their language. You see the patterns the Torah has in terms of just weaving the story, in terms of they say, Hava Nivna, Hav, come, let's build, come, let's make bricks, and God says, come, let's confuse. So, Nerda, let us descend. Now, what's interesting about let us descend?
Why?
why does Hashem have
well,
this?
Well, he had descended before.
Right, he already did. What happened in verse 5?
He descended.
Right. Verse 5 says, "Vayered Hashem liros asair." Hashem descended to look at the city, and now he says, "Behold, there are one people, one language, and this is what they're doing. I have to stop them. Come, let us descend and there confuse their language." Now, I don't know what it means for God to descend, but whatever it means, he's down there already, and now he says again in the plural to whoever he's speaking to, "Come, let us descend." So I don't know if it means on a simple level that he went down himself and now he's speaking to some angels and he's saying, you also have to come down. Unclear who that he would need to speak to anybody and why we have this second language of Nerda, let us go down. We already had that language in the beginning of verse 5, Vayered Hashem. Hashem went down and he's in the middle of speaking while he's down there and says again, come, borrowing the language that they had used, come, hava, and now he says, nerda, let us go down, v'nivla sham sifasam, and confuse their language. And why should we confuse their language? Asher lo yishmu'u ish svasrei ehu, that they should not understand one another's language. Now, re'ehu is the same language you'll see from verse 3, Pasuk Gimel. Vayomru ish el re'ehu. Each man said to. Now re'ehu literally would mean like friend, colleague. V'hafto l'reyacha. A re'a is that language that we have, and that's what's being used. That's what they said. Ish l're'ehu. So now they've been described as b'nei ha'adam, sons of man. They say ish el re'ehu, and now Hashem uses that same phrase again in his language. They will not understand ish svas re'ehu, the friend, the re'a that they spoke to earlier, saying let us build a tower and a city. Now, when they speak to that same friend, they will no longer understand what each other is saying. Vayofetz Hashem olsam verse ches, pasuk ches verse 8. Vayofetz Hashem olsam misham. And Hashem dispersed them from there, al pnei chol haaretz, vayachtelu livnos ha'ir, and they stopped building the city. Okay, fundamental problem in this pasuk. What's that?
First, he dispersed them, and then they stopped building.
Okay, there's a more fundamental problem.
Didn't stop building the tower?
More fundamental. I'll give you a hint. Read verse 7 and 8 together.
Why did he have to disperse?
Wait, one second. What did he say? He came down, he looked at the people and he said, what? I can't believe it. You're one people in one language and this is what you're doing. I have to stop this. And how's he going to stop it?
They won't speak the same language.
That's what he says explicitly. What should verse 8 say?
And then they stopped. They didn't understand.
And he confused their languages and they stopped building the tower. But what does verse 8 say? Where is that coming from? I'm like reading my story. Everything is going fine. I mean, I don't understand the story because I don't know what they did wrong. But clearly something that drew the ire of God. I don't know what it is, but it's clearly bad. Comes in, he came with and he says, I have to put a stop to this. And I know exactly how to do it. I'm going to confuse their languages. And then you read verse 8, Vayofetz Hashem olsam misham al pnecha, and Hashem dispersed them from there over the face of the earth. Why? What? It didn't even say that he did what he said he was going to do, which was confuse the language. Okay, what is the deal with that? Where is the dispersion coming from when what he said he was going to do is simply confuse their language, which is not said here in verse 8. We will get to it in a moment in verse 9, but it's not said here in verse 8. And why does he disperse them when that wasn't necessarily part of the plot? Or didn't start off that way as being part of the plot. Okay, what else is interesting in Pasuk Ches?
I don't know if this is it, but why does it say al pnei kol ha'aretz? Why doesn't it just say al pnei ha'aretz?
Excellent. Okay, so let's focus on that point. It's on the face of the whole earth. How many times do we find that phrase in this story? Kol ha'aretz. The whole earth.
Verse 1.
Okay, we find it in verse 1, and the whole earth, Vayehi Chol Ha'aretz, the whole earth was one language.
Verse 4.
Then we find it in verse 4, right? What are they afraid of? Lest we be dispersed across the face of Chol Ha'aretz, the face of the whole earth. Then we find it again here in verse 8, in our verse. Vayofetz Hashem Osam Misham Al Pnei, again that same phrase, Pnei Chol Ha'aretz, they were dispersed. Now, let's tackle the two things together. We have that phrase of being dispersed across the face of the whole earth. Again, we have that phrase, all of the earth. We're going to find it again in the next passage. So out of 9 verses, 4 times the phrase, the whole earth is going to appear. Which is a lot, considering we're talking about all of 9 verses. But when we ask the question as to why they're being dispersed, what did God say He was going to do? Confuse their language. What does He do? He disperses them. But we've seen this idea before of being dispersed. Where was that? In this story.
They were afraid it might
be. That was their fear. Right? They say in verse 4, we have a problem. We need to build ourselves a city and a tower, and the tower needs to reach the heavens so we can make for ourselves a name. Why? Lest we be dispersed. Now, where did they get that from? No one has ever been dispersed like that until this point in history. We've had Cain and Hevel, or let's even go back to Adam. Adam was exiled, but exiled with his family out of Gan Eden. Cain is exiled, and then we have Noah, where they're just wiped out. Where did they get this idea that they're going to be dispersed, alive, but just all of them are going to have to separate? I don't know, but that was their fear. They settled, they moved to the east, they settled in Shinar, and they're afraid of dispersion. So they build this tower. God comes down and says, I can't let this happen, that's for sure. What am I going to do? Confuse their languages. And then what He does is, what they were afraid of. They were afraid of being dispersed, and He comes in and He actually then does that, and He disperses them. Where does He disperse them to? Pnei Kol Ha'aretz, the face of the whole earth, which is a phrase, which is this recurring phrase of Kol Ha'aretz was one language. The whole earth was one language. Their fear was to be dispersed where? Al Pnei Kol Ha'aretz, over the face of the entire earth. And that's exactly where they get dispersed to the face of the entire earth. Excellent. One other interesting point in the Pasuk, and that's the language of Vayachdelu Livno Sa'ir, that they stopped building the city, which is an obvious phrase, the takeoff of which earlier phrase? And in my mind, obvious. Maybe it's not so obvious. In verse 6. Right. Hachilam Lasa. This is what God says, and this is what they begin to do. That same language of begin, which we found that Noah, the first thing that he does is he began by planting a vineyard. God now comes and complains and says, you're one language and one people, and this is what you begin to do. And then the Torah says, after they're dispersed, it then states, and now they stopped. Vayachdelu, they no longer were building the tower. They stopped building the city. Excellent, thank you. Correct. We've had this thing throughout the story that there are two entities. They're building a city and they're building a tower. And what did God go down to look at?
Both.
The city and the tower. When He disperses, what do they stop? City. What happened to the tower? Why does the Torah only tell us that they stopped building the city? Are we supposed to understand that included within building of the city is the building of the tower? Or is there some significance in that the Torah only says Vayachdu Livno Seir and doesn't actually say the city and the tower? Here we have a focus on the city. If anything, now again, we don't understand verses 1 through 8 so far, but clearly there's a problem here. They're doing something wrong. It's not clear in the text what, but clearly from God's response, they're doing something wrong. Which one would you say is what they were doing wrong? The city or the tower?
The tower,
because the tower at least has the reference of the head will be up in the heavens. So clearly something is going to be there. So if anything should be stopped when God comes down and disperses them, even though He only said He was going to confuse their language, but He disperses them, and something was stopped, which one of the two should we stress? The tower. But the Torah says, what did they stop? city. The city didn't seem to be such a problem. Building a city? What's wrong with building a city? If we're going to find a problem somewhere, the problem should be in the building of the tower. Yet when we find him coming down and dispersing them, the focus is on Vayachtelu Livnos Ha'ir. They stopped building the city. Okay, some serious questions. One more verse. Al Kain Kara Shema Bavel. Therefore they called it Bavel. Kisham Bolal Hashem Svas Ko Haaretz. Because it was there that Bolal, which means to confuse, Hashem confused the language of Ko Haaretz, of all of the earth. Now, we weren't actually told that he did that. We are now told that, like, after the fact. In other words, in verse 8, the action verse of verse 8 only says that he dispersed them. Verse 9, which describes the action verse, says, oh, and he also actually did what he said he was going to do, which was to confuse their language. And that's the name of the city of Bavel, because they were confused. We could just sort of add this to our question on verse 8. If the name of the city is given the name Babel because he confused their language, why does it only say that he dispersed them? It doesn't actually state that he confused their languages. But we could just sort of add that along. So since he confused their language, therefore the name of the place was called Babel, from the word Balal, which means to confuse, so they called it Babel. Umisham hefitzam Hashem al penei kol haaretz. And from there, from this place called Bavel, where their language was confused, he scattered them over the face of all the earth. So it's really five times the phrase Kol Haaretz appears, because it appears twice in verse 10 and in verse 9. So five times the phrase Kol Haaretz. And this last verse that we have here, therefore it's called Bavel, because there he confused the language of all the earth, and from there Hashem scattered them over the face of all of the earth. Interesting. Now, how many people came to Shinar in the beginning, from verse 1? Or verse 2, really?
We don't know.
So we don't know. But at the end of the story, what does the Torah tell us?
They're all dispersed.
They're all dispersed, and he confused. What was confused? Which languages were confused?
The language. All the one language.
Well, there was just one language before.
So
we don't know how many.
Well, Kisham Balal Hashem Sfas Kol Haaretz. Because there, Hashem confused the language of all of the earth. So it sounds, in other words, let's say out of the 70 nations which you read about in the beginning of the story, only three of them came to Shinar. Would we say such a phrase at the end of the story? So there are three out of 70 here. And Hashem looks down at them and says, I can't believe you're doing this. I need to confuse your languages and disperse you. So how many languages would we now have coming out? And here are three. Because they came in, there were three out of 70 people, they all spoke the same language, they got dispersed. But the Torah says, from there, Bavel, and this is the reason why it's called Bavel, from there, Hashem confused the language of all of the earth. So it certainly sounds like when we go back to verse 1 and 2, there were a lot more people, a much greater representation of the 70 nations that we read about in the story which precedes this story, because at the end of this story the Torah feels comfortable saying the whole earth language was confused, and from here they become scattered over the face. So two things happen at the end of our story. When you say, well, what do we take out of the end of the story? Well, number one, we now have a confusion of all the languages. We started in verse 1 with one language over the face of the whole earth. And by the end, in verse 9, we end up with the confusion of all the languages of the earth. We also end up with being concentrated in one place, so now we're dispersed and scattered over the face of the entire earth. So we're coming out of Noach and the Teva, one little family. By the end of this 9-verse story, we're now everywhere. People have now been dispersed, and they're now speaking different languages. And what's going to be left for us in coming weeks, and you're invited to come back as many times as you'd like, what's left for us is what happened in the 8 verses in between. What is this story of the city and the tower in which we are given so little information that nets the result of from one language to 70, from being in one concentrated place to being dispersed? This is clearly a seminal moment in world history that the Torah is telling us these 9 verses, because we went from being one place, one people, one language, Am Echad, Safa echas, one nation, one people, one language, one speech. And by the end of these nine verses, we're dispersed everywhere, and we all speak different languages. What is the core of this story that results in that, that you would think it would be such a massive cataclysmic change in world history, it should be obvious when you read the story, and it's not. What is the story about that should result in that result? With all the little questions that we raised, Kol Haaretz is repeated all the time, and all the various other points that we went through. So, Mr. Shem, that will be our coming weeks. We'll go back over the story with some of the commentaries and try to understand a little bit about the Tower of Babel. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.